I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1983. The album, Trouble in Paradise. The host? Really? Mm-hmm. That's great. The guest? God damn it. What is wrong with my brain right now?
Okay.
You know what?
Let's start with the host.
Okay. Who's the host? I don't even know who the host is. All right. No. Anyway, the artist is Randy Newman. And my guest is Nick Robes. That is what we're going to call you, Nick Robes. That is your super, super secret code name. That's not true. Am I giving it up too much? Now I'm just digging too far into your name. Now people are going to be like, wait, what's his real name?
No, it's true. The other fun thing is that my parents get a big kick out of the fact that I have a stage name, mm-hmm. and they've taken to calling themselves Mr. and Mrs. Robes, even though it's not their name.
That is so... Well, the other thing is, every time I see your podcast's handle on Twitter, I keep wanting to call it What Would Scooby Do? And I know that is not the name of it. Okay, but that is what my brain wants to keep calling it. And
it's true, because I also... I abbreviate it as WWYSD.
Exactly. That's exactly why it throws me.
Yeah.
It throws me so much. But either way, that said, you picked Randy Newman. For the first time, somebody picked Randy Newman. And I think the first time I ever heard a full album of his, I was a little too young to understand irony unless it was super obvious. And it took a few years, and it took the internet and me being able to steal music to finally listen to like a few songs that are on this album. But I had never heard this all the way through. So when did you first hear 1983's Trouble in Paradise?
Well, so Trouble in... Also, I feel like I need to put a disclaimer up top.
Uh-huh.
One, I might come off as a super douche. I feel like the idea of analyzing Randy Newman's Trouble in Paradise mm-hmm. might come off like this is like beyond Bret Easton Ellis. Also, I feel like the second disclaimer is like I might be wrong analyzing this as a comedy album, and I'm fine with that.
I do not think so at all. The album that I grabbed when I was a teenager, not knowing better, was Bad Love, and on re-listening, it is actually very, very good. Obviously, can't really do it on here because it was never released on vinyl. But it's satire, and satire is a form of comedy, so I'm 100% down. Especially since it starts out with his most famous song, and that is heavily satirical, and I was feeling it today, man. I was super
supposedly
feeling it.
Yeah, you were in LA traffic.
Exactly. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Fuck this place, man. Like 100%. Like,
it'd be so funny if you were like on La Cienega while he's like La Cienega Boulevard, and you're like, we don't love it.
But you get so here's the big thing about it is, and I'll eventually let you talk, but it is a song that gets you pumped the fuck up against your better wishes, especially once you start listening to the lyrics, and that's why it's good satire.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And to back up, Trouble in Paradise came a little bit later. I was mm-hmm. probably like in college or something when I really started looking into Randy Newman. I mean, I'm of the perfect generation to know Randy Newman as the avuncular uncle who writes songs for Disney.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
You know, like he was the weird Muppet voice who's singing like, "You got a friend in me." And then, you know, if you know that growing up, and then all of a sudden you're like, "Wait, what's happening? That dude wrote a song called Short People Got No Reason to Live?" So I found Trouble in Paradise while I was in college, and I was just like, I became obsessed with it because I could never pin it down, but it always seemed fascinating to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it is one that you've just thrown in my lap that I'm going to re-listen to. I have to now. And I mean, I had a bunch of them sitting in my collection anyway. This was not one of them. And I'm kind of pissed because there are three songs on here that I already knew. And then one of them that I absolutely adored anyway. I mean, I like them all, but there's one that when we get to it it's one that I think about a lot.
I'm excited to hear which one.
Well, yeah. Well,
there are the songs on this album that like, I pass over, even though I listen to them. I'm like, okay, here we go.
Sure.
But there are the songs where I just like, the ones that I keep going back to. And one of the emails I sent to you earlier was like, I started Room 237-ing this shit. Like, I started, like, I felt like one of those people, like, in Room 237. I heard the voice in my head, like, well, you know, I had heard Shore People Got No Reason to Live, and I didn't think much of it. But then, you know, 1993, a friend of mine had told me about this song, My Life Is Good, and all of a sudden I started to think, Randy Newman's talking about the moon landing.
Now that's a documentary I want to make. That is, and I would watch before I'd watch actually watch Room 237 or 230. Room 237, is it a sequel to the TV show 227? Because that's kind of what my brain just did. My God. So all right. So it comes. So for you, you had the same experience I did. I mean, I'm sitting draped over the back of my office chair as a Buzz Lightyear sweatshirt because I'm a child. And so I totally get that experience. It's like, yeah, no, it's the guy who sang this song in Major League, and he sang Buzz Lightyear's theme song. And then all of a sudden, you're kind of thrown this curveball. It's like finding out that Roald Dahl wrote adult books, like dirty adult books. Like, it's one of those weird things, except that...
And was insanely anti-Semitic.
at the very least...
That's a blow to anybody's conscience.
It really is. It's like, wait, no. Yeah, it's one... Except in this, at the very least, all it is like, oh no, this guy's cool. It's like, suddenly, like, your lame uncle is like, super, super cool. And, what's the first thing that stands... You specifically mentioned... Jesus Christ, My Life Is Good. So what's the first song absolutely. That you heard off the album?
Probably I Love LA.
Mm-hmm. Did you listen to it in order, like, time, or?
No, I think I just heard I Love LA.
Okay.
And I was like, what the hell is happening? it was just such a weird experience because it feels like a pump-up rock jam,
yeah.
Right? And it has all the hallmarks of a pump-up rock jam, minus, like, weird synthesizer breakdowns for
sure.
No apparent reason. Like the... It's like, why? Like, I was so having a good time, and then you just stop to, like, put in a waltz in the middle of this? Why is this going on? And then the voices, the I Love It is so jarring.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, it takes you out of it because all of a sudden you're like, who are those people? Because he kind of like gets you, he like hooks you, right? He says like, you know, like that, the big nasty redhead at his side, you're like, all right, crank up the Beach Boys, don't let the music stop. You're like, I got this. I might as well be listening to the Eagles.
Yeah, 100%,
but,
100%.
Right. But then, like, he just starts naming streets and a bunch of dudes, legit dudes, just go, we love it. What? Why?
Somehow.
It's the weirdest thing.
Today is the first time. Like, again, you can know that it's satire. But it's I've been in LA for 13 years at this point, and it's 14 years now.
Humble brag.
Yeah, right. Humble. Yeah. Hey, I also lived in North Hollywood like a character in one of his songs. Nothing to brag about, folks.
Let's go through it, Jason. All right, you've lived in North Hollywood.
North Hollywood.
The Valley.
Yep.
Venice.
Right. I love it. What happened was, yeah, all of a sudden, I'm just driving down the fucking LA freeway, and I'm because you forced me to listen to it. And it finally it dawns on me, like, oh, literally this whole song is him just listing shit. He's not talking about anything of value. He's just saying, look at those trees, look at that sky, and then
look at that mountain. Look at that mountain, look at those trees, look at that bum over there, man, he's down on his knees. Look at these women, ain't nothing like them nowhere.
Hollywood Boulevard.
We love it.
Santa Monica Boulevard.
We love it.
Sixth Street.
No reason
to love
it. Look
at those trees.
Oh, it's
look at that bum. He's down on his knees. Look at these women. There's nothing like them nowhere.
It's so good.
What?
It's so, so brilliant. And it doesn't hurt that his weird-ass voice is singing it the whole time. Because
he sounds like an angry Muppet.
That voice doesn't... It doesn't... I don't know. Doesn't instinctively in me signify anything in particular. Because even if you know he's from the South, that particular... His Louisiana drawl doesn't necessarily say anything to me. Like, again, it doesn't instantly say country. Where if he had like a Texas accent or if he had another Southern accent.
Ah, here we go. Okay. You know? All right. You're back.
Yeah. Oh, you lost me. Oh, shit.
I lost you.
Oh, good. Well, I was just saying all kinds of racist shit. I'm sorry about that. You didn't have to hear it. So, all I was saying is Randy Newman's voice is so unusual and so almost unsettling because it doesn't signify anything to me instantly, the same as like maybe a country accent, whatever that is, you know, Southern accent that says country to you or this or that, or even like a Don Henley who does vocals on this. There's something about Don Henley's voice that immediately, I don't know what to make of Randy Newman's voice. It's unsettling in an interesting way.
It should never be a pop sound,
right?
You know, because it's so idiosyncratic.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most fascinating thing. I'm going to say something. We'll put a pin in it, and then I feel like it'll get explored more. But I Love LA kind of sets the tone in the way that, like, I don't know where I am because it kind of seems like I'm pumped up. But it also seems like I'm not happy. And there's like a kind of like anger. But I don't know where any of this is coming from. I don't know where I am.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a really good point. Like, I thought, again, as I'm driving in my head, a lot, I'm noticing more the stuff that seems to be taking place in the world of LA. But it literally does skip all over the world. Like, location is a big part of this. But you're 100% right. It's very disjointed on purpose.
Yes.
That's the hard thing is like to do an album, you can say, I have a theme. Let's say my theme is, you know, lost love, whatever the fuck. Okay. But then to do a theme and then also kind of almost be doing, vignettes can come across as super, super, super cheesy. If it's done wrong here, most people, the same kind of people who don't notice the irony of I Love LA, aren't going to notice the themes, I don't think. Whereas, you know, somebody who's listening to it and enjoys it in the way you do, especially if you're looking for the comedy stuff, you're absolutely right. And I think you've got a good point. And I hope we'll discover it by the end.
Well, the banality of it.
100%.
It's like, I remember I first heard that... Tim Heidecker album that just came out recently. Mm-hmm. Recently, maybe a year ago.
Uh-huh.
I live in Maine. Everything's about 10 months behind. but you know, he does like that. He does a song where he just basically outlines two people's relationship. And it's just like, they lost touch after college, you know? And mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, that was a style in the 70s of like, how banal can we make these things? I mean, the Eagles made a goddamn career out of it.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, that's a very good
point. Randy Newman does it in a way that's like self-conscious.
100%.
I think.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's something about, I don't know, or, you know, again, I keep wanting to go back to his voice that is... He does this thing, and it starts in I Love L.A. Well, on this album, it starts in I Love L.A. because it's the first one. But, like, he'll sing, but motherfucker will scream at some point, basically. Like, he gets this, like, angry growl in his voice that, like, are you supposed to be pumped up? Or is this, a guttural scream coming from somebody who's internally so torn to pieces And I think, again, that's even more fits the theme that you're talking about. You know, maybe trying to love where you are, but also and like openly acknowledging the worst parts of it, and maybe accepting the worst things in the world for what they are, when maybe you could fix them, because we definitely get to that point at some point.
The amount of anger on this album is questionable. Like, it's like, how angry are you? I mean, we'll get to it in my life.
You're right. Yeah, but exactly.
Let's talk about the stark, goddamn, insane motherfucking contrast between I Love L.A. and Christmas in Cape Town.
Oh, my God.
What the fuck?
I love it.
This album
so much.
Could be called Whiplash.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Christmas in Cape Town is so much more about, just give people just a basic idea. It's a guy singing about his Christmas in Cape Town, and clearly he's a white man, and this is 1983, so apartheid is alive and kicking, and
he won't stop saying the N-word.
Oh no. And
it's like Mark Twain up in here.
Oh yeah, he never shies away from it, and I'll tell you, like, there are times in comedy where I it makes me blush, and I'm just like, oh no, thank you. But he uses it to effect. I will give him that. He uses it to high effect. The line that stands out in that song to me is "Beer don't taste the way it used to," because it's just a guy who can feel his entire world coming down around him and deserves it but won't accept that. He's just like, nah, come on. Like, it's just it's also I also like that's such a super American way to phrase it, because
yes,
you know, and that because only Randy Newman's going to write in his voice, but as a guy who's grown up in Cape Town and, you know, is living off of racism.
But also the way that it worked, like that kind of like, you don't taste the way you used to.
I know. There's it's something like, about yeah. it. Like,
and
the
fact that he's
only
like criticizing
maybe he
like
just,
a
at
woman
some point
who's living with him.
Uh-huh.
Oop. Sorry, I think we overlapped a little
bit. I think we did. Go ahead.
But the fact that he's like criticizing a woman who's literally freeloading off of him because she is criticizing the lower class people who live around them for not like working harder. I'm not entirely sure like what her point is.
Right.
She's like criticizing the black people who are literally being oppressed. Yeah. And he's like, go back to your own damn country.
Oh, it's harsh, man. It's a harsh ass song. And
also, I like the idea that he like creates a stereotype about black people with Star Wars lunchboxes.
Oh my God, how did I miss that? Holy shit, I missed that line entirely. Holy crap.
He talks about his brother. He's driving his brother to work. And it's so vignette-y. I mean, this is like a smart John Cougar Mellencamp song.
It's amazing.
And so he's driving his brother to the work, and the black people are standing in line to get a job, and he says it like it's commonplace, where he's like, they all got their lunch boxes with the Star Wars on it.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. Holy shit. I guess I had missed that. That's interesting. And the thing is, that could be anything. I could be completely missing the point behind it. I wonder. I mean, my first thought is, I know it's a big thing that, poorer countries get all of our overstock. That kind of shit happens.
Oh,
and,
sure.
You know, I wonder if that's
like the
part
people
of
who have the wrong Super Bowl winner jerseys.
Mm-hmm. That's just fascinating to me. But yeah, I don't, again, it could be a detail just for the sake of detail, because you're right. It paints a fucking picture, man.
Well, and it feels like a manufactured stereotype.
Yeah, 100%.
Which cracks me up to like it's his version of black people have an extra tendon in their leg
that lets them
jump higher or whatever. You know, yeah. I mean, like he creates like this racist persona that's so amazing.
That's a really good point. I like that. That was one of my, as a kid, one of my favorite jokes with my friends would be to just like, oh, well, you know the way Asian people like apple juice more than everybody else. Because, you know, we grew up around so much racism that it was just like, let's come up with something. But nobody ever caught it because they were too dumb to realize that we were making fun of them for being racist. But what are you going to do? That's why Randy Newman appeals to me. And it's ridiculous jokes about Star Wars launch boxes. I can't believe I didn't hear that, though, when I was listening to it the first time. Christmas in Cape Town, day to say. All the boys on the beach still blow. The summer wind still kicks the clouds around. My little brother, babe, works out at the diamond mine. Drove him out there at 5 this morning. The niggas was waiting, big long line. You know those big old lunch pairs they carry, man, with the picture of Star Wars painted on the side. They was staring at us real hard with his big ugly yellow eyes.
So, I mean, while we're on Christmas in Cape Town, which is like a very racially motivated song, so he uses the N-word multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
It makes my butthole clench every time he does it. But it's a very different. So, like Sam Kinison, you know, when he does the AIDS bit and he's like, because some. All right, I'm gonna be delicate. Some F words couldn't blank their own blank holes, and they had to blank some monkeys. You know, that's not irony. That's
no,
him. You know, yeah. But Randy Newman was like so far ahead of the game that he's going to use language as like a weapon.
Oh, yeah.
In that way, you know.
Yeah. I've just found another way for you to do it. Can you please cover that entire Sam Kinison bit on stage, but just say blank holes and blanks and all this? Just, I want to hear that. These F words couldn't
it's
blank
funny
their own blank
holes. I would have no problem saying assholes.
Sure, but
I in that bit, I'm just like, I can't.
Yep, let's just bleep it all out. It's
Or like Eddie Murphy, is it Raw or Delirious where he does the bit about getting off the airplane and the cops pulling him over and there's the dude on the roof?
Oh my god, I can't remember which it is, but I mean, I know that the title of the track is F Words, and then F Words Part 2 on the second album, because
that makes my butthole clench.
Yep.
Like I feel awkward listening to that.
Me too.
And I would never in a million years put it on while a friend was over.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But Randy Newman saying the N-word, I'm like, listen to how he's using it. This is great.
Yeah, 100%. No, and I feel the same way too. I feel like it feels like such an angry use of it in the right way, where the only right way that I think a white dude could ever do it, where I'm playing a character who is a white man who is a racist, and I'm saying this word to point out that this is a bad thing. Like, that's, you know, you would have to like the footnotes to this to somebody who had never heard irony, somebody brand new to the country, let's say, and doesn't know English that well. You would have to just say, no. Oh, I'm sorry. There are a lot of footnotes to give you. Please, this is a nice man. Don't hate this man. Ironically, and I wonder if this ever happened a lot, Gene Wilder tells a story in his autobiography about how, when he
Kiss Me 'Cause I'm Weird? What's it called?
Kiss Me Like a Stranger.
Kiss Me Like a Stranger, yes.
So good. And he talks about when he dated Terry Garr, how she gave him a Randy Newman album, and he felt so embarrassed because he had, you can, when you read it, it's like clearly he was riddled with anxiety his whole life. But he was so embarrassed because he thought that Randy Newman was a black man based on his voice, and he was just so embarrassed that he didn't know better. It's like, but Gene, just, it's okay. Calm down. Like, you read it. It's like, oh, you poor guy. I mean, he had figured his own shit out by the time he'd written the book, of course. But like, that was always an interesting thing to me because I never made that mistake. But I guess I could see it. I mean, the man's from Louisiana. The man has like, same with, what do you say? Harry Connick Jr. I mean, you know. You might make that mistake. You might if you got the same kind of training as a lot of black singers are going to have. It's funny.
Amy Winehouse,
exactly. She's where the hell is she? I know England, but I don't know what part.
London.
No, just straight up London.
I mean, you know, she had that lot. You know, no way. I mean, come on. I've had 50 margaritas, darling. Please, just spill it out for me.
Also, like Adele. Insane. That her speaking voice then produces that singing voice blows my mind. That's, yeah. Anyhow, that's been a segment about voices. I hope you guys enjoyed that. That was my fault.
White people sounding like black people. Anyways. So, we now move from Christmas in Cape Town. I'm not actually looking at the album list. What song's
the next song is The Blues, which is the other one, one of the other ones I had heard before this.
Oh my God.
And I'm glad.
Can we talk about?
Yeah.
Well, so sincerity is like such a weird thing for Randy Newman because you can tell that he craves it, but he doesn't know how to do it.
Sure.
So that song is like, I mean, it's like, it's basically like this pastiche of like, he keeps talking about these bad things about this kid, but it doesn't seem that bad.
Right, right.
And then you get that angelic voice come in where, when I was 5 years old, it's like, what the fuck is Paul Simon doing?
I know. It's so perfect. Like the note I wrote was that Randy Newman is singing not the blues, about the blues, then sung by a white guy who has the fake blues, which is what it. You know, and it's so good. And my first guess is that it just is a song about, you know, race appropriation, which it seems to be, but it's also, I love the idea. You know, what's interesting too is, and this is maybe the fifth or sixth example I've heard on an album I've covered on this podcast of this kind of trope that I still enjoy, which is white guys doing the blues about problems that aren't that big.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's a common thing, and it's so common. Like it's not like a shitty joke where like a joke you hear a million times, you get tired of it. It's interesting the different ways people do it.
What Kids in the Hall did it.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. They also did it. Man. Yeah. Yeah. That's actually my first thought. But yeah, it's a common joke and it's funny. And it's interesting to see the different way people do it. I really love this though. And I think Paul Simon is the perfect voice to throw in there. Cause he has the least bluesy voice, possible.
But so sincere.
Oh yeah. Beautiful.
I mean, it's insane how much he puts into it.
Uh-huh. And I was also wondering too, I'm like, so what did Randy Newman tell him was going on? Because, you know, like, it's like, I'm sure he wasn't tricked into it. And I know he's got a good sense of humor, but it's just so, it is so sincere. Like, it's as good a performance as anything I've ever heard Paul Simon do. And that's what blows my mind, I think.
Well, and the whole thing is like, it's such a broad story. Because it's like, the whole thing is like, this kid has he has a quote unquote hard life. Mm-hmm. Not really that hard. His father leaves and he goes to a piano and just starts playing the blues because his father left. His life isn't that hard.
Right.
But you get like Paul Simon milking it like there's no tomorrow.
Right. It's beautiful. Oh, God. I mean, yeah. And from a guy, too, who like I think and this is going to be a lot of just me pulling this out of my butt because, you know, what little I know about Randy Newman, but being a white dude from New Orleans, my guess is he probably saw a lot of that. It's probably more in jazz, but a lot of white people trying.
Is Randy Newman from New Orleans?
He is. Yeah. And that's
no way.
That's why
I always thought he was from LA.
That's just the thing. Like okay, hold on. Now this is hurting my brain. Hold on. I'm on his page. Give me one second here.
Ooh.
He was born in LA. Okay. There we go.
Let's get deep.
Okay, he was born in L.A., but lived in New Orleans as a small child and spent summers there until he was 11. Okay, so that would explain why his accent when he sings is there. Okay, so we're both right. I didn't know that, though. So it also does explain his mixed feelings, mostly somewhat mixed, about Los Angeles. Man, I... Whew. 73 years old. I need to get him on the podcast, guys. Anybody out there, if you know Randy Newman, get that man on my podcast immediately.
I would just, I've never listened to an interview with him, but I wonder if that like avuncular uncle, angry Muppet voice happens when he talks too.
I've heard him talk a few times.
Well, you know. He sounds like a ancillary character from Song of the South.
It's not as strong. When I've heard him interviewed, it's not as strong. And there's something about, there's always a look on his face like he's prepared to fuck with you if he has to. Not in like a, he doesn't have like a...
Bob Dylan.
Right, yeah. Maybe a little more Bob...
Not a Bob Dylan.
But right. Yeah, but like a, yeah, I don't know. He's a troublemaker. And I don't know. I love that about him so much. He always looks like there's always something going on behind those eyes, and it's kind of fascinating. They really, you know, I really want to point out very quickly there. I don't know shit about music, so there's a lot of names on here that I'm sure I should know and don't. But the few names that stand out that are on this like massive list of people who perform on it, Don Henley does
John
back
Lennon.
Vocals. Yes. Yep. John Lennon. They brought him back. Don Henley. Let's see, Lindsey Buckingham, Bob Seger, Linda Ronstadt, and of course, Paul Simon. There are a number of others who I'm sure I should know the names of. Like, I know this guy played guitar for, Steve Lukather played guitar for Toto, that I had to look up. But there's a lot of people on here, and I don't know how many albums he'd done before this, but like, it's just crazy to pull in all these damn people to do this very weird, funny album.
He's got the blues, this boy. He's got the blues. You can hear it in his music. He's got the blues. This boy has got the blues. You can hear it. You can hear it.
When I was 9 years old, my daddy ran away with a woman on the train. Oh, his little boy ran to a room where his piano lay in wait for him.
Well, I mean, like, Randy Newman, to me, seems to exist in that sort of in-between state of popular with the public and popular with musicians. You know, I mean, like, you think of people like Tom Waits or, you know, any of these figures that seem to be, like, sort of fringy, but they're super respected by the music community, and they kind of have... marginal success, and then you listen to somebody in an interview and they're like, oh, you know, I really love like Harry Nilsson, and it's like, okay, who's Harry Nilsson?
Right.
Or like Van Dyke Parks. It's like, who's Van Dyke Parks? Oh, he wrote a bunch of the songs on Pet Sounds. It's like, I don't know who the hell this guy is, but then you listen to his album and you're like, what the hell is this dude? You know, I mean, it's like very, he kind of exists in this between world, especially being a Disney icon.
Sure, yeah. And
that's the most fucked up thing ever.
And an underappreciated comedy icon. Because, you know, honestly, most people, when I hear comedians talk about him, I swear that their knowledge of his work is nothing beyond hearing something from Toy Story and then that fucking dumb sketch from Family Guy. That is
all of them.
Yeah, my God. Like they that one bit about Randy Newman where he sings about things he sees, and that sounds funny, but that is never tracked for me. That joke never tracked. It's like, okay, I get it. Seth wanted to do the voice of Randy Newman. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
There's also a movie. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head right now, but there's a movie from the like 80s mm-hmm. that did the exact same joke with Lou Reed.
Really?
And Lou Reed's in a New York cab and they're driving around and Lou Reed just narrates where they're going. We're down on Fifth Street and we're going on down to Five.
That's funny. I'd never heard of that. It's the exact same joke. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
So in our track listing, we now come upon, it's a pretty short song, Same Girl.
This is where I start to get really trepidatious mm-hmm. about calling this a comedy album. Mm-hmm. It's like, but there's also Real Girl, Same Girl, and Real Emotional
right.
Girl. Those are two tracks that almost have the exact same feel.
Yep.
And it's it gets kind of weird because, like, so I have a buddy of mine who's a improviser in Chicago, and I'll send him comedy stuff and I'll be like, oh, I think this is funny. And he always comes back to me saying like, all right, what's the joke?
Mm-hmm.
Like, explain to me what the joke is. You know, it's kind of like an exercise or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, I've started like really trying to preempt him mm-hmm. on it. Like, he didn't get Brett Gelman at one point, and I was just like, oh, shit, do I not get Brett Gelman? but, like, I was trying to figure out these emotional moments, and, like, are they jokes, or are these moments of sincerity? You know, it's like in a, all right, let's get hyperbolic. It's like an Adam Sandler movie where there's actual emotion in
mm-hmm,
it, right?
Right.
To try and boost the comedy. I guess that's what this is, right? Is that what he's thinking? Or is he just like, I'm writing pop songs. I don't give a shit.
I have wondered
what do you think,
the
Jason?
Exact same thing. I mean, the intent is clear in the ones that are more... I had this trouble when we were talking about Martin Mull a few weeks back. Where my brain was like, if it was a little more obvious, like Randy Newman, and then I'm like, hold on, listening to this whole album, there's not a whole lot obvious about Randy Newman. I mean, I had so much trouble as a kid understanding irony because he was so good at it. I think he, you know, I mean, he obviously knows what he's doing, but then I also feel like he's just like, well, if I'm going to write it, I got a sad song to write. Maybe it just goes on this album. I don't know. That's my first thought.
Mm.
You know, and but it's so fucking sad. You're right. This isn't Real Emotional Girl.
Feels,
neither of them are peppy.
It feels
they're both
purposeful.
Depressing as fuck.
Yes. Also, this album opens up with a love letter, quote unquote, love letter to LA, mm-hmm. and closes with a condemnation of Vietnam.
Right. Right.
What?
Yeah. Years after, by the way. It's an interesting, yeah.
So, I mean, like, you know, I joked and said that this album should be called Whiplash. It, like, that transition to, you know, these portraits of these young women,
mm-hmm.
it's just, it feels so weird.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know if I have much else to say about those songs. I mean, when we get to Real Emotional Girl, I'll have... other things.
Sure.
So this one I have a hard time with.
Yeah, no, I did as well. I actually, you know what's funny is the track listing I got online earlier was slightly off. So I listened to these just a little bit out of order, not too much, but that way we'll get to My Life is Good a little sooner. The next song, it's a song, but it's very short, and the music is almost a sound
effect.
Whatever
happened to the fucking Duke of Earl?
So good. I love that that stood out, stands out to both of us, and you've listened to it a bunch, and I only just heard it. But, yeah, this is another one of those songs about, like, oh, no, I'm white, and I feel like, you know, I feel oppressed because people are coming into my neighborhood. But it's so short, the song itself seems like it's a sound effect. And
Oh, because it doesn't, it's one riff the whole goddamn time.
It's so good.
But it also sounds, it sounds like that guy that I've sat next to at the bar. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been at a bar at 1 a.m. and heard that guy where it, like, it kind of starts out like normal. And then all of a sudden he's like, and the goddamn Portuguese are moving in.
Right, right.
And you're like, what?
Yeah, and I don't know. And,
then he turns it into a thing about the Duke of Earl. Why?
That's and I wonder, too, if that's like a sideways, if Randy Newman's like, what's the, like, a bad example of good rock and roll? Like, who would ever pick, or just unexpected, whoever would pick the fucking Duke of Earl out of any song to give an example of classic rock? He's just so angry that that's the first thing pops into his head. It's the Duke of Earl. I don't know.
Over like Chubby Checker or like, you know, any of the he's basically an episode of Quantum Leap.
Right. And it's yeah, you're right, the song doesn't let up, and I would call this just as much a sketch as it is a song. It's like, yes, like a musical, like, because it's sung, but like a musical sketch, because it's just like, it's this guy talking, the music keeps going when he stops talking, and that music is one of the things that is the part of the problem for him. And like, it's also like dude, by the end of the song the music's louder than you are, so get used to it. I don't know, man, it's layers in this shit. It's so good.
And also, like, is this the first time in the album, I think it is, when, like, he starts to get, like, mad,
right? Yeah,
like, he starts to get, like, Randy Newman mad when he gets that, like, growl in his voice more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. It is. And I think that's one of those things where it's like, if you didn't get his intent and then you hear him sing with this voice, you might want to think a second time about how you feel about this song, if you're not questioning it, you know, like, if you heard I Love LA, if you listen to this whole album, you heard I Love LA and you missed maybe a more subtle growl, by the time we get to Mikey's and then My Life Is Good, you best understand what he's trying to do here.
All right, let's just get into it. My Life Is Good. What the hell is
this
happening?
This is one of my favorite songs of all time. And I didn't know it was on this album. I just knew the song. I fucking love this so much. So much.
This is my most Room 237 moment, yeah. I think. Because I have a conspiracy theory.
Hit me with it.
He's talking to the teacher the whole time, right?
Right. Yep, that is true.
So at the beginning, when he's like, he's just talking about his life and, you know, the other day we went to Mexico and we found this girl and we brought her back with her. She wipes the baby's ass. Burn. She wrote this song for me. He's playing that for the teacher.
That's a really good point. Yeah. You know what? That's really good. If indeed, because he must be talking to, that's really good. It's fucking great. Oh, shit.
It's the most ridiculous thing ever.
This teacher says to us, we have a problem here. This child just will not do a thing I tell him to. He's such a big old thing, he hurts the other children. All the games they play, he plays so rough. Hold it, teacher, wait a minute. Maybe my ears are clogged or something. Maybe I'm not understanding the English language. Yeah, you don't seem to realize.
Well, I mean, and all he's trying to do is say, fuck you, my life is great. What do you do? You can't insult me, PTA, you know, at this parent-teacher meeting. You can't do this. I'm rich. I'm rich. Look at me. I'm fine. Everything is. And this is what stood out to me. How often do you hear any kind of musician, if it's ever about how troublesome fame is, how troublesome money is, it's the whiniest, fucking shittiest song. And here all he's doing is saying, I would sound like a whiny asshole. Why don't I make this the whiniest asshole song in the world? And then have him be angry. Because, I mean, anybody gets defensive if you question their lifestyle. Anybody. Doesn't matter if they're living a good life or a bad life. Whatever. But it's about him.
Taylor Swift is still trying to, like, re-get country
cred.
Yeah,
right. And he calls himself Randy, or Ran. I think he calls himself Ran in it for sure.
He name checks himself.
Yeah, so this song is about him.
While talking to Bruce Springsteen.
Yes, that is... Why did you be the boss for a
while? What the fuck? We met a man the other day at the Bel Air Hotel. Number one, Bruce Springsteen would never stay at the Bel Air Hotel, but... His name is Mr. Bruce Springsteen. Like the whole thing is just so bizarre. Mm-hmm. And it's also, I mean, I would say, I don't want to get too political, but in our current state of affairs, kind of reminiscent.
Oh, yeah. 100% it is.
Awkwardly.
Yeah, it's I Love LA Part 2 kind of, because it is, or Part 3, because Mikey's also takes place, I think it says in Long Beach or some shit. It takes place somewhere in this area.
Long Beach ain't the same as it is when we were
right,
growing
there you
up.
Go. Yes, that's right. And so, so the My Life is Good is just this continuation in this just desperate trying to justify his own life. And I just, it's the only way you can do a song, I think, about fame and rich being a problem, and riches being a problem. And that's just to exaggerate what an asshole you probably are when you complain about these things.
So I'm not going to go too much into depth, but my job, I happen to deal with wealthy people on occasion. And the other day I had to do a delivery, right? And I'm in an elevator with the client, who evidently is doing fairly well, and a stranger who lives in the building, same as him, is in the elevator, and he starts chatting him up, and it took 30 seconds for this guy to say the phrase, I'm direct quote, my son is a successful screenwriter in Hollywood. Nope, sorry. Big time.
Oh,
big time screenwriter.
Oh, he said is a big time. Holy shit.
And like, that's the attitude, right?
100% it is. 100% it is. Justifying your existence when the only way to do that is not to. Like, that's so woof. That's amazing. That is, you know, that's one of those things, too, that makes me think if I ever moved out of L.A., it's like, well, at the very least, I'll always have a shitload of stories. I can be like, yeah, I met John Hamm. Yeah, I knew him. Yeah, we're best friends, me and John Hamm. Otherwise,
I forgot you live in Palo Alto.
Right. I could just, you know, if I ever, you know, it's one of those things. It's just so, now, I'm not going to ask names, but did you, the name of the person who said that was the person that you were working for with? Helping?
Well, so this was the client buying an item.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, and they. So did you? Think
and I
to
can
look...
say that I looked up the son.
Okay, that was my question.
He may or may not be attached to some screenplays that I was kind of like. That's what failing upward is.
Yeah. Right. Okay. That's funny. That's interesting. But he's big time. We know that. That's
but
all.
But he
matters,
was. Oh yeah. I mean, these are multi-million dollar movies. But the thing is, all I could hear in my head when he said that was like, "Gonna buy some real good cocaine."
There's so much.
That's when he gets angry, right?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%.
He's so pissed.
And I know these people, man. Like, I know these people. And it's, yeah. Yeah. Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. It's so good.
And their name is Jimmy Pardo.
Jimmy
Pardo. God damn it.
Yes, notorious cokehead Jimmy Pardo. Oh, God. He would kill me. He would absolutely kill me. I keep my temple clean. We keep our temple clean on this show. I love Jimmy Pardo so much. Oh, holy shit.
America does.
Of course. I mean, they should, and if they don't, fuck them. That's all I got to say. If you don't like Jimmy Pardo, go suck one.
Agreed.
What's funny is when I talk about Jimmy Pardo, my voice gets a little clippier, and I start to Pardo on accident. Like, listen, ass fuck.
I mean,
I love when he calls people ass fuck. It's the funniest thing. Oh shit. Yeah, this is no. Yeah, My Life Is Good is like I said, one of my favorite songs, and it's weird that that such a bitter ass song would be one of my favorites. But I just think it's just, I don't know. It's perfect. It's a perfect character portrait. It doesn't get. It's hard to get better than that in a song that is also catchy. It also gets weird. Like again, it's another one like I Love LA that throws some weird shit in there that is unexpected and wouldn't be in place in a regular pop song.
Agreed. I think the part when like my balls start to tingle is when he goes, she wipes the baby's ass, because like that synth kicks in and like it really starts to drive, and then I'm like, oh, I'm into this.
right. How do you not enjoy this? And it hits you on a base level. It tempts you to forget that there are lyrics. That's the good stuff. You know, it tempts you not to think. And Randy Newman is perfectly happy to let you not think so that you feel stupid later on when you start thinking again. I'm pretty sure that's what
it's also. I mean, it's crazy because, like, I think of, like, you know, like a Warren Zevon or even, you know, in the contemporary sphere, like somebody like Matt Berry, right? You could honestly play a Matt Berry album for somebody and they could think it's totally legit, which it is. I mean, like, it's a great, you know, he makes amazing albums. Opium is one of the greatest albums of the 21st century, my opinion. But are we back?
We're back. I got he makes amazing, and then that's all I got.
I think Matt Berry makes some of the most amazing albums, and Opium, I think, is one of the best albums of the 21st century. It's just so weird, but you could play a track, and someone would think it's from the 70s.
I gotcha. Okay.
Because it's not, it's not ironic where it's pissing on something.
Sure.
It's ironic where it's infusing something. Does that make
sense?
Yeah,
100%.
I feel like I just got super pretentious.
You did, and you did it very well. I thought, but okay. It's something I completely, I don't know Matt Berry's work, but I know the exact thing you're talking about. I 100%, there are some things that are, well, I mean, if you want to talk about my favorite series of movies, which is anything Edgar Wright does.
Police Academy.
Yes, exactly. You're right. Police Academy. if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't have Bobcat Goldthwait. Actually, you know what? Like, why did I shit on probably the best actor in that movie at the end of the day, and also one of the best directors of the last several years? I picked the guy who has the dumb character. I could have shit on Steve Guttenberg. He's probably a nice guy, too. I shouldn't shit on any of them, but you know.
Now, apparently, notoriously an asshole.
Steve Guttenberg? That's so sad. So sad.
Who knows?
But yeah, my favorite movies are Edgar Wright's movies, and they are full of heavy reference to other things, but they're done all, you know, it's all homage. It's all done with love, and there's plenty of music. But I also understand that some music, like, you're right, if it's got this sort of 70s tinge, the immediate assumption is, oh, they're doing a thing. Oh, is it making fun of a porn riff? What am I supposed to be laughing at here? No, just relax. And I mean, that's a challenge with art too, is like, you know, when do I let my brain go away? Should I be letting my brain go away right now? Uh-oh, did I lose you again? Uh-oh. Hello? There you go.
All right,
back.
We're
okay.
Back. that's the challenge with.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember what I said. Let's just pretend I said something super smart and then you cheer. That's what happens.
Oh my God, I lost you for a second, but yes, absolutely.
Let's go to Miami. Miami's the next song that is
weird.
It's so weird.
It's a carnival.
Yeah.
Right?
That is what, yeah. The only thing I wrote down was the best dope in the world and it's free, which he says several times.
there's also like the second most unnerving line of the whole album, which is like the girls here so impure or something like that.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's right.
And it's fake. Medina. And it comes from Argentina. See that little dog there with it? Well, it treats it like it was his middle boy.
Second most disturbing line. It's just like it feels gross, and he means it to be gross.
Sure.
There's also like some fun stuff with like the people who he pays for like his hotel room or something who are giving him the dope. It's a great vignette.
Yeah, I mean, what's funny too is that he has the balls on a song on an album that has, you know, what's going to be a hit. I mean, he doesn't know what's going to be a hit, but I Love L.A. was probably planned to be released as a single. To have a song in which you also say, oh, I love Miami several times, and gee, I love Miami. Like, I think I take some balls to just be like, oh, I'm kind of doing the same song. It's fine.
Also, once again, capitalizing on that idea of, like, smarter John Cougar Mellencamp, I think... When I first started listening to Randy Newman seriously, I was like, oh, Randy Newman is basically just making songs that are, this is what you sound like. Like, it feels like
right.
he just listens to pop music and he's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, it's the weirdest, like Miami is, he's like, best dope in the world. And it's free. It's like, what? He's like, yeah, that's what you sound like, fucking Terry.
Right. It does have that feel. You know, by the way, and this makes me think, I want to listen. This was recorded in North Hollywood, I just noticed. This is his seventh album. So I am going to have to bang through the other ones at some point. And I want to... you're probably right. Like, I want to know what other styles he's picking up and picking on, if, or how early he even starts that kind of riffing on other people's styles. Like, I don't know enough. I don't know enough of his old stuff. All I know is...
Yeah, why does he name check Bruce Springsteen?
Why does he name check Bruce Springsteen specifically?
Because like, who is notoriously... Well, early on in his career, like, fairly clean and, like, not a star fucker at all.
Right, right.
Like, and working class.
Mm-hmm.
What, like, why? I also have a Room 237 thing where I think, like, the music changes when he starts talking about Bruce Springsteen. Anyways, we don't have to go back to that song. But, yes. he stylistically is, like, all over the map. Miami, he's doing this weird carnival thing. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, it's nuts. So the next one is Real Emotional Girl, which is the other one that I also, you and I both have the same thoughts. Again, just kind of a sad song that sounds like a dude taking advantage of a woman who's emotionally fragile. It's not
clear.
There
is a set of punch, though, in this one.
And I probably missed it, so hit me with it.
He says, at one point, he does, I'm not that familiar with Woody Allen albums, but I feel like this is a Woody Allen joke. Because he says at one point, she's real emotional. She even cries in her sleep.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point. Yeah, it does kind of sound like that could be just as much a gag as it could be a very sad, depressing line. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's kind of great. That's kind of great.
Let me phrase it this way.
Mm-hmm.
My girlfriend, you know, she's so emotional. She even cries in her sleep.
Wait, now I get it. Now it's a joke.
Right?
Now I
understand. It sounds legit like a Woody Allen bit.
It really does. It does. Yeah, that's a good point. That's solid. You should. I will recommend, even though he's a giant creepy pervert, you should listen to some of Woody Allen's, at least listen to his first. Well, he only had really two albums, technically. They just kept re-releasing them. worth listening to. Some of the best hewn, silly, dumb jokes that you've ever heard. And just forget that he, try and forget. You won't be able to forget that he's a pervert. I'm sorry.
Dude, I'll still watch his movies and enjoy them. Sure. Yeah, and I always, my problem trying to go back to Woody Allen, because I didn't have a problem with Lenny Bruce, mm-hmm. But Woody Allen, it always seemed to me like he was like, my wife, I should have had a committed, and then like big laugh. And I was like, what just happened?
All right.
Like, so not to create too much of a problem, but I live in Maine, mm-hmm. and so... The big thing here is Bob Marley, not uh-huh. the reggae artist.
There's another Bob Marley?
Yes. There's a Maine Bob Marley who is a... he's a comedian. You might have seen him at the Laugh Factory on... what is that? Sunset, right?
Uh-huh. Okay. Sure.
And
yeah.
When I listen to Bob Marley, he does a lot of like Maine bits where he's like, oh, we're going to go up to camp. And then the entire audience laughs, and I'm like, am I listening to Tim Allen? What just happened?
Who did you pay to laugh at that?
Why is everybody laughing?
That's really funny. I want to see, you now make me think I want to see Randy Newman do stand-up, though. I just feel like that would be fantastic.
Well, they say that all rock stars want to be comedians, and all comedians want to be rock stars.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, he's successfully straddling the line, so he doesn't really have to do it, but it would be amazing to watch him do stand-up. Painful, probably, but great. Actually, not necessarily. He might be really good at it. I think it's the voice that always throws me. Is
if he did it in the Randy Newman voice?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be fine with that. He's like a subtle Weird Al.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's not a bad way of looking at it. We might as well skip over Real Emotional Girl because there's not a lot to say about it.
Yeah.
It's
Take Me Back. This is another one where I'd like, it's like kind of straightforward, but not, but like, mm-hmm. I also don't know where to fall in it.
Mm-hmm. Right. It is the whole story about a guy born in North Hollywood and raised and living in North Hollywood and how a woman ruined his life. And that's basically seems to be. His life is thinking about how his life was ruined by one person.
But his life isn't ruined.
Right, right.
He's living a life, normal as always.
Yep. But
he's like, I have to do my laundry alone.
Yeah.
Boo fucking who.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. It's all these people who have no, you know, I mean, if you're going to take anything away from this at the end of it, I think it's probably that, you know, stop fucking complaining. You're still alive. And that's, you know, that does seem to be the theme of several of them. More deep than that.
Yeah, and like,
but,
that like banality, that like that this interesting commentary on how stupid we can be is found in these amazing vignettes of people being hyperbolic,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
these people elevating their lives to myth. And it's like, what happens if you look under a microscope at this guy's life?
Right. You know, and that's a good point because if he was writing songs about these and not these characters and not so much as them, because are they all first person? Because he doesn't always do that. But this album might all be first person and I don't.
Yeah, right. Because like even Real Emotional Girl or... Mm-hmm. Same girl. The blues is probably the only third person, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
until Paul Simon comes in. So there's at least a first person element of it. So
yeah,
that's so fucking funny. God, there's so much going on here. The next song is creepy. The next song creeps me out, by the way.
Can we talk about the twist?
Uh-huh. Yeah, please. Please.
That song... It's a Stevie Ray Vaughan song,
mm-hmm.
up until all of a sudden the third act of this song,
mm-hmm.
rape.
Yep, 100%.
Right?
100%. Yep. All I wrote was violent and rapey because that is the only thing that stands out once you hear the whole thing.
It's the most terrifying thing ever.
It really is.
Because it changes,
mm-hmm.
so quickly.
Mm-hmm. and it changes with he's just talking about a pretty lady and talking about how pretty she is, and gets a little dirty, and then the line "Hey Bobby, get the rope" comes up, and it's like, oh fuck, what was I just listening to? And
I would even say the nipples line.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, you're right. You're
where
right.
I
yep.
just go like, what?
Wait, okay. He's getting very specific. Yeah.
But also, okay, here's another Room 237 moment.
Mm-hmm.
He references the redhead in I Love LA. So is this the same universe?
That's a good question. That is, I had the same thought. I had the same thought. Cause,
right?
Yeah, it's fuck. It's yeah. These are things that we need to ask Randy Newman personally about.
It's like how Danny California is referenced in Californication before Danny California came out.
Oh, that's right. That's what I've heard. I don't know my Red Hot Chili Peppers lore that well, but I'd forgotten that is a thing. That's a good point. Yeah, I mean,
well enough.
I guess I should know those. I live in LA, but I don't.
You're constantly running into Flea at parties.
I know, you know. He never wants to talk about Back to the Future 2, and I was like, well, okay, fine. What else am I going to talk to you about?
You and Crispin Glover hanging out at clubs. You're never able to talk to Flea. It's just it's so hard for you.
Flea, come over here, Flea. Why do I think that Crispin Glover sounds like George McFly? He doesn't actually sound like George McFly. And also,
not that far off.
Not entirely, no. So then the final, you're right, it's a weird close. In my head, or the track listing I originally got for some reason said that My Life is Good was at the end of the song, the album.
Sure.
So, which seems like it would have tied it up, but it ends in just, I don't know, I don't think
a 1-2 punch.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Because it goes from There's a Party at My House,
yeah,
which is the creepiest song ever made.
Sure.
To I'm Different, which is my obsession
right.
on this album.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my God, wait, why did that not show up on this? Okay, I listened to that one. So the track listing on this website is fucked up. So my apologies for that. I think this track listing is totally wrong. Yeah, so yeah, next one is I'm Different, which is also fucking fantastic. So I'm sorry, I almost closed it out.
Did you catch the weird thing at the beginning? So there's an intro. There's a piano intro, right?
Right.
And when he comes in, is offset. So the whole thing, okay, this is going to be music nerd. Everything is 4-bar phrases, right? I'm different. I don't care. Who knows it? So it's all 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, 3, 4, 4, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
Everything's 4-bar phrases, except the intro.
I'm different, don't care who knows it. Something about me is not the same, yeah. I'm different, that's how it goes. Ain't gonna play your goddamn game. Got a different way of walking. I got a different kind of smile. I got a different way of talking. Drives the women kind of wild.
Kind of wild. He's different.
I don't care who knows it.
Something about him.
It's not the same, yeah.
He's different.
That's how it goes.
He's not gonna play your gosh darn game.
The intro is only 3 bars, and he comes in on the 4th bar, and they just remove a bar.
Wow, that's crazy. I know very little about music, but that you just gave me enough of a condensing of it to understand. That's fucking fantastic.
It's also weird because there's the music is strange. The production is strange. Mm-hmm. I mean, those women just sound weird,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "God damn," they say, "Gosh darn,"
mm-hmm.
and. They are like, so this is like a music production thing. They have like a lot of reverb on their vocals.
Yeah.
But there's no tail, so it doesn't sound, it doesn't continue after they stop. They're very isolated, but they sound like 20 feet behind him because he's so present.
Yeah, right. That's a good point.
here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
The production is weird. The music is weird. His character just keeps saying how different he is, but he's not different. What's different about him?
Yeah. Yeah. Not a
What does he say? He's, I got my own way of walking. the women kind of notice me.
Right.
You keep saying you're different. How are you different? He never tells us.
It is,
he
it
just
is.
Keeps saying, I'm different. I don't care who knows it. How?
It's a spiritual sequel to I Love L.A. Again, talking about shit that this person thinks is fantastic, but he can't give us one good reason why that thing is amazing.
It's La Cienega Boulevard! We love it. It's a street. Does he even say Sunset in I Love L.A.? He doesn't even say Mulholland Drive. He doesn't say Sunset.
Right? Yeah. He picks the drags with the most traffic that nobody talks about as being interesting.
Like fucking La Brea.
Yeah, right.
I was in L.A. once. Don't worry about it.
Oh, shit.
So now the 1-2 punch of the end of this album, you get the weirdest, most banal song where he says absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And then he condemns Vietnam 20 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, first person, but the guy's basically preaching that, hey, thank you guys for dying for your country. And it's just...
When he says, like, what's the line where he's like, to die... Like, that feels... You know how in that Rolling Stones song, they say the background singer had a miscarriage, and you can hear it because she says, like, rape, murder.
Oh, yeah.
And you can hear her voice crack. When he says to die, I kind of have, like, one of those moments.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's...
Because I'm like, oh, shit! This is real!
Oh, shit.
In an album of irony and cynicism, in the most bizarre way, you just, like, just told me to go fuck myself because you now have something real to say and you can pull it off? Fuck you, Randy Newman.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's, but it's also got the, a lot of, I mean, it uses, people don't know what I'm saying if I say, so I'll just use the word, and please understand, folks, that I'm not a fan of this word, not a racist, but he does use the word gooks in this song, and, because again, it's first person, and it's just like, he likes to use these characters who think they're noble, saying the worst possible shit, and it's so high-minded sounding. Like, this person, they've done the very best they can. It's so noble that you guys died to defend this mud hole, as he puts it. Oh, harsh.
Let me take off my pack really quick.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing with, like, to a different extent. I mean, like, Blazing Saddles.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, 100%.
Because you get, I mean, even Police Academy. To throw back, you know, when they use the words like spook.
Oh, and yeah, you're like, right.
What? But like Blazing Saddles, it kind of has that same vibe where, yeah, we're going to use these words as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
But if you put that next to, a dude saying prairie shit.
Right.
It's gonna have a different meaning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's, it's weird to establish context in that way, like to do this, you know, to put the N word so many times in something as camp as that is something that literally recreates old Warner Brothers bits. you know, I mean, that's the challenge, you know, I gotta tell you, like one of the, I probably talked about this on the podcast before because Blazing Saddles comes up quite a bit, but
sure.
I used to know a guy who I was talking with him and I worked with him and I said, hey, he asked me, what's your favorite movie? I said, well, Blazing Saddles is my favorite movie. And he said, oh, really? Yeah, it's a funny movie. It's a great movie. I'm like, yeah, I think it's great. And then, you know, of course, I get on my intellectual high horse and just start talking about, you know, I think it's just this perfect, perfectly ironic look at racism. I think it's beautiful. And he's like, wait a minute. Wait. You think that movie's against race? But they say the N-word the whole time. And I'm like, wait a minute. So you're telling me you thought this movie was funny and you also thought it was using the N-word sincerely. So you've just told me you're essentially a racist or a moron or both. Like, do you? And I had to just walk off and like just say, oh, I work with this person. I can't even bother.
Oops.
Yeah. This person also, oddly enough, just tried to friend me on Facebook. He's a nice enough guy, but.
Step one, yeah. Remove foot from mouth.
100%. He'll never catch it. It's one of those people who just has no concept of irony. And I'm not a teacher.
Oh,
I don't have the
gosh.
Time. I don't have the time. You know? My life is too short. I'd rather.
One of the lines that still cracks me up, and I think of it like daily, and I still don't know why,
mm-hmm.
is when he goes, land, see snatch.
I know. I got to play him on stage once. I'm going to brag about
Harvey
that.
Corbin? You got to play
I got
Harvey
to play
Corbin
that character. Yeah, I did. And I had to adapt the line where he talks about winning an Oscar to, how did I put it? Best supporting actor in an off Broadway drinking based production, and it got the biggest laugh in the world, because we were all drunk as fuck, and it was great, so much fun. But yeah, I got to play that part. I think I probably mentioned that every time on this podcast too, because I'm very proud of it. I love that through this discussion of Randy Newman, we've spent a good chunk of it talking about Blazing Saddles. But it's not off the rails as much as we usually go, so that's fine.
One of my favorite things of all time. Yeah, we kept really on topic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of myself.
You should be. I mean, a couple times you're like, hey, let's talk about this. I'm like, oh, sweet. He's hosting. Yeah, I don't need to try.
I run a Scooby-Doo podcast that is barely about Scooby-Doo.
Well, I mean, when I asked if I could be on the damn show, I said, hey, let's talk about something not Scooby-Doo, can we? And you were very kind and let me do that.
But it was ultimately about Scooby-Doo, and you kept bringing it back to Scooby-Doo, which I loved.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad. I'm surprised I did that. Yes.
Everybody's sick of us jerking each other off.
I'm not finished, as it were. Well, let's do what we normally do at this stage in the podcast and ask, like, so if people only think of Randy Newman as the guy who did the Toy Story music, why listen to this album? I mean, it's the seventh in his oeuvre, but it's the one you're the most familiar with, and I just said oeuvre, but what's a good reason?
I definitely think that there are some hard songs to listen to on this album.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're not into it, Mickey's, I think, is hard to listen to.
Sure.
I think, I even think the sad songs on it. I mean, Real Emotional Girl is hard to listen to if you're not in the mood for that. But I think it's such a weird album that if you're willing to give it 10 cents, it's going to give you a dollar.
Yeah. Yeah. That's perfect.
Put that on the book jacket.
Where can people find you? And what I don't know when this is going to go up, so I apologize. But if you have anything to promote that's loosely promote, at least shows, whatever the hell, go for it.
I mean, if I have shows coming up, they can find out on nickrobes.com. You can find my podcast, What's With You, Scooby-Doo, at whatswithyouscoobydoo.com, facebook.com/whatswithyouscoobydoo, twitter.com. Is at WWY Scooby-Doo. Couldn't get WWYSD. I write dumb songs based on the direct-to-video movies of Scooby-Doo, and you can find that at WWYSD.bandcamp.com. And that is as much as I'm willing to say right now.
I didn't know about the songs, and I apologize. That is now going to be my new project. I'm going to have to go listen to these because that's fucking great. Oh, that's phenomenal.
They're dumb.
I don't doubt it, and I'm excited. I like dumb. Dumb is fun. I mean, listen to the fucking podcast. Dude, this has been super fun, and obviously you're welcome on again, but it would be super cool. If you find yourself in L.A., you need to let me know, because that way you can be on in person. I don't know.
We're going to do Frank Welker's Almost Sold Out.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That absolutely has to happen. And my hope is by then I've just worn that man down and he finally agrees to do his first podcast and it's mine. and we just talk about that album for an hour.
The man with the greatest voice ever,
yep,
and the worst web page ever made. Yeah,
absolutely. Yep. It's still 1996 over there.
Angel Fire.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That's great. That's so, so good.
My favorite.
Yeah.
Anyways, so thank you so much for having me on, Jason.
Thank you. And thank you guys for listening. And as always, oh, you know what? Shit. I should say this. All of 2017, I'm listening to a comedy album a day and I'm reviewing them. I am several albums behind
on Instagram
at this point. I'm putting the minute previews on Instagram. But if you go on youtube.com/comedyonvinyl, you can watch the full thing. And I've done several hours of reviews at this point. I'm still a few albums behind, but give them a listen. That's it.
As a fan, can we do the closer together? Can we do like a 1-2-3 thing?
That's very nice of you, and yes, we can. And it won't be synced up, but it will be fun. Let's give it a shot. Thank you guys for listening, and as always,
have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune into the new Stand Up channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast.